Hello and welcome to Dairy Pod. I'm Kristen Davis from Dairy Australia. In this episode, we share key insights and guidance from Norlag Heffernan, an independent management consultant specialising in leadership and organisational psychology. Norlag joins Dairy Australia's Bernie Baxter to discuss what makes a high-performing dairy business and identify some immediate actionable solutions that farmers can take to improve their own operation.
It's my pleasure to be joined here today with Dr. Norlag Heffernan, independent management consultant from Ireland. And Norlag, you have been here in Australia for 5 weeks. This is your last day. Thank you very much to your family for allowing you to be out here for those 5 weeks. Now, you've been out here four times now. What have you noticed over the years of coming to Australia in managing how farmers have moved and managing staff, how they've reflected on the information that you have presented?
Good morning, Bernie. It's lovely to be here, and thank you so much for having me and all of the work that goes into having somebody like me travel the country and speak to the farmers here. It's my fourth time being here, and there's definitely a shift. Like, it's interesting to see and speak to people and say they've taken one or two things away, and that is always the challenge. We're speaking to busy people who already have a lot on, and of course when you go and speak to people, you want them to change everything they're doing because you think you have some good ideas, but actually just taking small things and making a difference really helps the business, because when we get small quick wins, it encourages us to keep going. So certainly I would definitely say the mood is different from 2022. We've just come out of COVID. My last visit, we just come out of COVID, so people were still tight on employees coming through their business. The backpacker system hadn't set up again really. But I would say the mood is much better. There's more confidence in the room in terms of people having passed through some really difficult times and managing to cope and to make their businesses more robust. But the things that I have come across that I would have delivered or suggested are good ideas are things such as the discounted planner approach. So thinking about that planning idea, sometimes that's a challenge for farmers because they have all that information in their heads. They're not really used to getting it out on paper. But once they do, one of the great bonuses of doing that is farmers begin to really appreciate how much they do, how much they're capable of doing, and maybe at times realizing that it is unreasonable to expect other people to have the same commitment or to put as much effort in as they do. Once they see it on paper, they realize what a considerable amount of work it takes to make a great dairy business.
And you've had many people who have come along have been before, and you refer to them as the Hefties.
Yeah, the Hefties. We could think of a good name. It was a little bit like the Taylor Swift followers. So we decided if people change from different venues, we'd call them the Hefties, just as a joke. But it is extremely humbling to think that people would come out and want to listen to what I have to say again. And I find that a great privilege. If my dad was alive, he'd be 100 this month. So he would be just chuffed to bits to hear that I might be having an impact in helping dairy farmers in a different country, in a different continent. So I find that really, really lovely and great to feel that somebody feels you've made a difference. That's what we're all after at the end of the day. So yeah, the people coming out to see me again, encouraging friends, maybe before, it's quite typical in businesses for the wife or our female partners in the business to be tasked with the people management, and they'll have come out and heard me before or heard me on some of the webinars that Dairy Australia have on their YouTube channel. And they then bring along their partners or their husbands and say, come on, you come out and have a listen to this too. And that's been really powerful, because the more people that come from the same business, then we start having a shared language. They can start holding each other accountable, because it's not just one person saying, we need to do this and we need to do that. It's two people going, yeah, we could do that together. How would we do that?
It is impressive that when the partners come along, because they say, okay, I understand now, this is what you've been talking about, this has been really valuable use of time. So let's get into it. You've just been, over the last 5 weeks, you've been across seven dairy regions. Western Australia will be by webinar later today, but across the seven regions. What have you noticed around hiring when you're talking with staff and you're talking with owners? When you talk about the term first clean up your business, what are you referring to when you talk about that?
Yeah, so one of the things that I would speak most commonly to businesses about is becoming an employer of choice. And there's always an assumption that if there's more work to be done, we need more people. And that's something that business quite often calls addition sickness. So it's, I need to add more. If there's a problem, I need to add. So I need more staff. I need a young person to keep them for life. Really, that person hasn't existed for a long time in any sector. I tend to think of them as unicorns. They don't exist. So firstly, what is more valuable to do is, you know, farmers totally understand the concept that working with something that isn't fit for purpose is actually very uncomfortable. So that's basically like running a large herd through a dairy that isn't the right size for it. And it's much easier to raise the entire thing and then build it up again to the correct setting for it to be fit for purpose. So creating a business that's fit for purpose to bring in employees is, first of all, being really surgical with your business and stripping out all of the noise and the blockages. So could you simplify it? And when you start simplifying it, it may be that you don't need that full-time person at all. Maybe you just really need somebody who will milk every second weekend in the mornings. Maybe you just need a bookkeeper. Maybe actually, if you've got both partners in the business, you just need somebody who will do housekeeping or clean your house for you or mind your kids for you. So there is an assumption that if there's more work to be done, therefore I need more people, I need more hours in the business. But it could actually be stripping it back, looking for redundant habits. So in dairy, we'd see a lot of redundant habits because many dairies are generational businesses and we still do things the way we did before, though our herd and our business is completely different to what it was. So it's cleaning up the business, first of all, removing blockages, asking yourself very, very cleanly, what exactly do I need? Do I need a full-time person or do I just need somebody who has got good machinery handling that can do some work feeding cattle or whatever else you're thinking about that might be? It's just a blockage that if I offloaded it to somebody, it would clean out the system a lot and take some pressure off me rather than automatically assuming to bring in an employee.
Yeah, so when you're really busy though and you're thinking, I just need someone to fill a position, if you have a high number of backpackers that are turning over every 3 months, even more emphasis to really maybe take that strategic approach, step back from the business, say, right, what do I really need here? What am I trying to achieve?
Yeah, and one of the best ways to do that would be, like, I was speaking to a farmer in one of the regions, and his kind of conclusion was, I've got a lot of things that are frustrating coming through me, and I've decided I need a unit manager. And I was just explaining to him that that's going to actually add more complexity because you need to learn. I mean, one of the challenges is learning to let go of the work that you do, letting go of the power that you have in terms of decision making and trusting somebody else to do that. So it is thinking about people coming into your business, stepping back and making it as easy, rather than just assuming you need somebody. You look for challenges that are coming your way a lot. So if you're talking about busy periods, what are the things during the busy periods that just, they're almost like the straw that breaks your camel's back? It's those couple of little things that if you didn't have to do them could make all the difference to you. If you've got a lot of people coming through your system rapidly and you're already busy, being strategic in what you expect them to do. You know, if you're under pressure already, you're not going to be a good communicator. A lot of farmers will say, I'm not a good communicator. That may be a fact, but it is definitely true that if you're struggle with communicating, you are even worse under pressure. Okay, so it's looking for opportunities to offload stress and to think about, well, if I do have people coming through rapidly, could they do the less challenging tasks that still put pressure on the system? That's one way of looking at it. Another important one is that we may need somebody last minute, so we're taking anybody we could get, but always put a deadline on it. Don't settle for not the best. Don't settle for somebody who's just filling the gap. Very easy for me to say that here, very easy for me to stand in front of a room and say that, because a lot of people will say, well, we don't have that quality of people coming through, or we don't have that volume of people coming through the business. But it is important, if you want to get to a point of being a good employer, an attractive employer that people want to work for, you really have to have that strong culling policy that you would actually already use with your cattle or your cows. So I would speak a lot about all of the things you do really well with your cows, do that with your employees. That's an easy sell to dairy business because your primary employees are cows. And interestingly, when I say to a room, who are the primary employees in a dairy business, it takes a while for the room for somebody to eventually say the cows. The cows, you know, cows are a transaction. They give you milk and you feed them. That's the exact same with employment. They give you time and you pay them when you're looking at employees. Dairy farmers make it as easy as possible for their cows to get to the point of work. That's what you need to think about when you're looking at your employees, making it as easy as possible for them to do their work. You cannot make anything easy for your employees if you don't step back, think about your business and work on your business before you bring in employees. And especially when they're in there, working out, are they in the right place? Could they do better? Could you be better for them, employ them better?
some there might be a problematic person that's in the business that is in a senior role, that if you actually remove them, even though you feel very dependent on them, others might actually rise up and the culture might change.
It happens all the time. I mean, it hurts. And one of the things we know from psychology is that if you invest something, if you suffer an amount of pain to get something, you're very, very reluctant to let it go. So hard won is hard lost. So you've put all of this time and effort into an employee. We run foul of something that is a default in human thinking, and that is the sunken cost fallacy. Well, I've worked this hard with the person, I just keep going. Actually, being able and having the courage to remove somebody who's wrong for your business, first of all, put a deadline on it. Give them every opportunity to step up. But that means you've got to put a lot of thought and effort into it. But the day you remove somebody who shouldn't be there, I can guarantee you the entire system breathes a sigh of relief, because you're not complaining about that person. You're not whinging about that person to your family. You're not, trying to tidy up after that person, and everybody else steps up. And the fact is that rationally, when we're not under pressure, when we step back and think about it, every one of us would prefer to take the burden of extra work than the burden of the wrong person. Nobody wants to carry the wrong person. But under pressure, we are blinkers. And we think somebody's better than nobody. I just hang on to them. And that's when we start getting some quite dirty behavior in the workplace, because we're hanging on to people for the sake of it rather than them being the right people. Every time you're holding on to the wrong person, you may well be not giving yourself the chance to have the right person.
You have a PhD in leadership, degree in psychology, degree in business management. You say to people, don't just dabble in employing staff. It's either 100% in or don't do it at all.
Yeah, it's a really, really important one. When we look at, we can get very quick feedback when things are going wrong with cows. We can get very quick feedback when things are going wrong with land. We can change it quite quickly, and we can contain it. The problem with working with people is that they can tell a story about you beyond the farm gate, and you cannot control it. You cannot control a single other person. So one of the challenges I would say to every room is, you really are better to contract cow numbers. Now, that's seen as a huge failure for many, many farmers. But you really are better to contract cow numbers and chase quality rather than quantity. That's where you get your incremental improvement, than dabbling with people. So do it well or don't do it at all. Because realistically, one of the biggest problems with something like dairy is if you are at a point where you are privileged enough to have staff, and it is a privilege for anybody who thinks, God, having staff is a nightmare, I wish you didn't have to do it. Step back and think about it. Your business is good enough. You have survived in a tough industry. You have done so many things well that allow you to have staff. That is the perk of your success. So it's a symbol of your success that you're able to have staff. However, you're at a point where you're probably fatigued from if you're getting to the point where you can employ staff, you've put a lot of time into your cows and into your system, you may well be fatigued. The problem with this fatigue is you're now going into the next phase of your business, which is actually far more challenging than cows and system, and that's dealing with people. So we need time and space to manage people properly. And the risk is, if we don't do that, we can severely damage our business, because if you get a bad reputation, you are always on the back foot trying to recover. The human brain is wired towards negative information. If people pick up any whisper that you are not a good employer to work for, they retain that information far better than if the whole world told them how good you are to work for. That is the challenge with people management.
Everyone's an ambassador that comes on your property?
Yeah, so one of the things I would speak about a lot is being a brand ambassador. And I would have to say I've met so many absolutely amazing farmers on my 5 weeks here. I've met so many amazing people working for Dairy Australia, absolute brand ambassadors for the dairy industry, absolute brand ambassadors for Australia. I have felt extremely welcome and cared for and looked after. So every single person who passes through your business is a brand ambassador for your business. They can tell a story about you. That's the vet telling a story about how you treat your employees. That's the lorry driver telling a story about how you treat your cows. That's your staff telling people in the pub, people, their friends, everybody else, people in different communities, people in different countries, what they think about you. So it is, you cannot control what they say about you beyond the farm gate. So you need to make sure that people coming through your business at least don't have a bad experience if you can't give them a good experience.
Now, when we think about hiring, you mentioned first clean up your business. And then you mentioned don't assume to have to look outside your business to fill a vacancy.
Yeah, so this is one of the things that we're, you know, we always, because of this addition sickness, I need more. There's a tendency to look outside, but actually you're really putting yourself under pressure when you start doing that. And you're doing a number of things that are going to catch you out. So the safest, you know, there's the old expression, isn't it? Better the devil you know. So the safest scenario is to hire or promote internally. So we look first inside and see who we have. And we offer it first inside. Now, it could be that you feel people in your business aren't ready to step up, or maybe they feel they are and you're thinking, I'm not that sure that you're capable of doing that. What's really important is you give everybody the option. You say, I need this person in place by, let's pick a date, the 1st of September. Critically, before I move on to anything else, never give a task or take a task without a deadline. The human brain is target focused. So you track towards something specific. You say, right, I need a person. Obviously, I'd love loads of staff today, but I definitely need somebody in place on the 1st of September. Just pick a random date. And you say to staff, I need a unit manager, or I need this position filled. I'm offering it to you first. If anybody is interested, come and speak to me about it. If it isn't filled from somebody already in my staff, I am going to have to go externally, and I will expect you to support that decision. But I'll get you involved in that process, and I'll explain that in a minute. So you are giving them a fair opportunity to step up. Now, if somebody comes to you and you don't believe they're capable, because you've already cleaned up your business. So this is one of the things that's really good about cleaning up your business. Part of cleaning up your business is knowing exactly what's required for every role and knowing exactly what skill set is already there. So if somebody comes to you and says, I want that role, and you think this person isn't capable of doing it, you articulate to them where they are and where they need to be. You then demonstrate or speak to them about all the hoops they would need to jump through in order to get to that level of ability. And they need to get that level of ability by the date you've picked. So you put it plainly in front of them and they can make an informed decision. Quite often, if you've done this properly, somebody will go, oh no, I'm not ready for that at all. Okay, I see what you're doing. And I see the difference between where I am and where I need to be. And you say, okay, well, if you're not going to, but you must also, if that person says, I'll step up, I'll do it, I'll work hard, you must give them that honest choice, that honest chance, and you support them in trying to do that. So do not sabotage that person in trying to reach those goals. Support them, but with a very aggressive eye on the deadline. So
you offer training in that process? If there's
absolutely training. So you say, these are the holes you jump through. Like realistically, if you do this properly and there is a big gap, then the person is going to go, that's too big. I can't achieve that in the time allowed. And they would be able to see that themselves if you've done this properly. However, there may be somebody who you haven't really, you know, they may be hiding their light under a bushel. They haven't really shown their potential. And they've always just played it a little bit safe. And now given the opportunity, they are actually willing to step up. And you see them conscientiously working every day and you're supporting them in that role. So yeah, training, absolutely. Training is a benefit in any business. It doesn't backfire. So if it's handled properly, it doesn't backfire. Well, sometimes it backfires when somebody comes in and says, I've done a 3-day course on leadership. Now I shouldn't be the leader of your business like that. It's going to backfire there. But it's about understanding that you give that person an honest chance to step up with a very aggressive keeping of that deadline. And then when it comes to it, they can say, I've done my best and I couldn't reach it. Or you say, look, you've done your best, but you couldn't reach it. I still need to bring somebody in, but I value that you stepped up. If this situation arises again, I will certainly be putting it back to you first. But because you couldn't reach the level that we need, I still expect you to support the other person. Now, that is strict but fair. That person has been given a fair chance to step up and to take that role. They haven't reached that marker. And so they are obliged now to support the person who comes in. Now, it is extremely common in businesses for new staff. One of the reasons new staff fail, particularly when you put them into a management role, is because incumbent or existing staff sabotage them. One of the reasons existing staff sabotage incoming staff is because they feel they were looked over. And that generates a sense of unfairness. We can get to the point where we have a really brilliant employee, really genuine, who turns sour extremely quickly because they felt they were treated unfairly. Humans, people have an extremely strong driver for fairness. And if at any point they felt they weren't being treated fairly, they will hold it against you and they will undermine the system. That in fact is actually the employer or the business owner's fault, not the employees. That's an oversight of the employer, so busy trying to fill a gap that they haven't thought it through and how it plays out. Because when you bring an employee in, it's not about bringing the employee in, It's thinking long-term, how will this impact somebody else? Any change to the system is going to cause disruption. So if you bring in an employee, they're going to be disruptive in the interim as people try to figure out what's happening and what's going on here. If for any reason I've decided that this person has been brought in for the wrong reasons or I don't like them, well, I will, even if I intend not to, I'm likely to sabotage them. So it's looking for offering it first. If somebody puts their hand up and says, I want to do it, and you're not certain about their ability, you explain to them where they are and where they need to be. You show them the roadmap of what it will take to get to that position. You allow them to have an informed decision. It's an informed decision where they go, yeah, no, I can't. I'm not able to push through that amount of time. Or can I at least give it a go? You hold aggressively to the deadline so that you can control it, because otherwise that person could take a long time trying to step up. And in the meantime, you're stuck without the person you need. You then make sure that everybody knows if nobody steps up internally, you will have to go externally, and you will expect the system to support the new person coming in. People will see that as strict but fair. All of the leadership research shows that people respond really well to behavior that's strict but fair. It is strict that the person didn't meet the deadline, but it's fair because they were given a fair chance.
Same process if someone thinks they're better than actually are.
Absolutely. And we hear this all the time. You know, somebody, confidence is a good thing, by the way. You know, you want somebody who's confident. You know, one of the things we would see, for example, in you expect somebody like a consultant in medicine to be very confident. You don't want somebody to be shaky coming in to do an operation on you. You know, kind of, I'm not certain about this, or I doubt myself. So confidence isn't necessarily a bad thing, unless, of course, it makes you a bit arrogant. And sometimes that confidence comes across where maybe the business owner feels a little bit edgy because they feel that the person with that level of confidence is maybe making them feel like their job isn't as difficult as it is. And sometimes it's just a little bit of stepping back and saying, well, this person is confident. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. So it's challenging your assumption about that first. But if you've cleaned up your system, you can very quickly articulate to somebody who thinks they are better than they are.
Now, like I've heard you say, interviewing people as a process of selection is the least effective. Can you talk to me about it?
Okay, so one of the things that we have in psychology are many biases that can write off somebody very, very quickly. So the interviewing process is actually highly geared towards visual information. So it could literally be that you don't like the way somebody walks into the room. You don't like how somebody looks for whatever reason. It's a default setting that we've carried over from our caveman days, that if we don't override it, can get us into a lot of trouble. So we might look at somebody and say, oh, they'll never be good at my business, when actually how they look physically has nothing to do with their capability to be a dairy farmer. So what we need to do is give ourselves the best chance to give other people the best chance. And that's about understanding that you will have biases that gear you against somebody. So people will employ somebody like me to say, how do I perform in an interview in order to be selected? Realistically, where interviewing is effective is where you've had a large number of candidates and you're now trying to decide between two very tight candidates. That's when you would use it. Typically in farming, you don't have that amount of numbers going through. So what you should be using is the most effective method of selection, which is called situational interviewing. And that's where, when somebody says they can milk cows, you don't just take their word for it. You actually see if they can milk cows, because you're an expert. You're going to spot straight away if this person is telling you a good story or if they actually know what they're talking about. And the other thing you can do that's really powerful is that one of the things that you should do, not you can do, that you really should be doing, is if you are not going to be the person who's working closely with a new employee, you need to get the people who are going to be working closely with that employee involved in the process. Because I might pick, you know, Bernie, I might pick you, but I don't spend any time working with you. I actually only see you once a week. And I'm selecting you to work with somebody who has to work with you every day. Now, I mentioned already that one of the main reasons that employees fail is because they're sabotaged by the existing staff. In order to override that potential of sabotage, what I should be doing is bringing in the person as part of the interview process, as part of the situational interview process, who's going to be working with you far more frequently than I am. And that might look something like this. I bring somebody in, I've got three people in my business, and I say, right, and some people will say, look, my dad's a really good gauge, or my wife's a really good gauge. People are, you know what, they'll be working with my son way more than me. I'll bring my son into that process as well. And another person, for example, in the business. So now let's say we've got three people who are going to speak to the same candidate. And that is really fair to the candidate, because what that does is it helps to override my bias. I could have had a bad night's sleep. I could be going to see the bank manager today. We could have had a downer cow. There could have been things in the system that meant I wasn't in my best state of mind to be fair to the person. And so I write them off on something that they had no control over. So by having three people in there, you can now, something like three people, you can now create an opportunity for that person to perform well. So one might speak to them in the office, somebody else might speak to them walking the grass and talking about the grass, and the next person might speak to them while they're bringing them to see the cows. That's three people who are making an assumption, an opinion about this person. If all three dislike that candidate, you would be extremely foolish to bring that person into your business for the sake of having somebody, because that person is constantly going to be on the back foot.
What if there's one?
What if there's one person who likes them and two don't?
No, one that doesn't.
One person. So then we would start looking at weighting the opinion. If I'm not going to spend every day working with that person, somebody in the, say we've used a panel of three, and the person who is the panel of three doesn't like that person, well, they're the one who's going to sabotage them anyway. So you would probably give far more weight to that person. Mm-hmm. Or you might say, that's not fair, actually, Bernie. You were up really early this morning. Your kids were crying all night. And you're nervous about something that's happening in your life coming up. You're probably not in the best state of mind to be able to judge that person properly. And so you're able to say, yeah, that's fair enough. I'm not able to judge that person properly. Or we might say, you know what? If you don't like them and you're the person who's working with them every day, I think that's good enough for us. We shouldn't bring that person to the business. Mm-hmm.
And so by having them participate in that, it helps build culture in the business as well.
It helps build culture. And remember, if I have said I like this person, I'm now obliged to work to make it work. Because if I say I like the person, then I've got to save face. I don't want to be embarrassed and say, yeah, I completely got that wrong. That's awful. So I'm not going to sabotage the person. I'm going to go out of the way to help that person to make it work. Another thing that is important to remember is that if we speak about farmers being there since two, that's an entrenched expert. And it's very difficult for an expert to teach a new person how to do something because they can't remember what it's like to be a beginner. So if you're 30 years old, it's 28 years since you were a beginner farmer if you started farming at two. So another good way to keep people in the business is to get the previous newest person to help with that journey of learning and explaining, so that the expert doesn't get caught up in not being able to explain something that's second nature.
What about frustrated farmers who, if they were doing the job, they would be, some staff are only able to achieve 70% of what the farmer can do in that role?
Yeah, it's a really, really common one. One of the things we have to always think about is the fact that in agriculture, in a first world country, agriculture is the only sector where we bring our children to work. And because of that, most farmers, you know, in dairy, we see most farmers are going to be farming since they were two. So by the age of 18, they've had 16 years work experience, when the average person is just scratching their head wondering what they'll do with the rest of their lives. So we have a huge amount of inbuilt knowledge, or what we call intuitive knowledge. It's not really, farmers go, isn't it obvious? Well, it isn't really. And they make the assumption that it's this second nature concept. Well, it's second nature to me. Second nature is actually still learned. It's just layers and layers, years and years and years of patterns and neural pathways. So we need to lay down strong neural pathways when we're creating habits. You can think of that as farm roads. If you're a farmer, the better constructed the farm road is, the more built in it is, the more robust it is, the more difficult it is to undermine, and the more natural everything happens. So when we look at somebody like a farmer, their intolerance for somebody, first of all, not working as hard as they do, is really unacceptable. And to some extent, that is a misunderstanding of the concept between work ethic and work practices. So I would hear lots of farmers saying they've got no work ethic. They don't want to put in the hours. They're out the gap straight away at home time. They really don't put in any extra effort. Well, first of all, if you're judging somebody that harshly, they'll probably live up to your standards, because that's all you're looking for. So what you decide about somebody is what you look for. That's a confirmation bias, another error in human thinking. And also, it is completely unrealistic to expect anybody, any single person, to enter your business as motivated as you are about your business. It's just rationally, you know that. Why would anybody be as committed to your business as you are? Now, what I do see regularly with employer of choice is that they earn that right through giving somebody a great experience, by having that tolerance, by not writing somebody off because they haven't the same work ethic as me. What a lot of farmers speak about are in fact work practices. And many of the work practices, this is a challenge. I have offended many a person saying this, that the work practices are incorrect. People take that personally. And it's not surprising that they do, because if I'm a farmer, then it's my livelihood. I've been doing it since I was two. It's probably a generational farm. It's really part of my identity. And so when we find somebody who gets upset with that idea, they push back about it. But the fact is, the thinking that created the business will not sustain it. It will not sustain it. What farmers need to do is to look at better ways to work. And so if somebody's coming into their business and capable of doing the work at 70%, that may not be a bad thing. Because what that actually means is that person can stay with you longer, they're more sustainable. If everybody's working flat out 100% every single day, that is a very quick road to burnout. So rather than saying, here's somebody who's not working at capacity, saying, first of all, can we remove some noise from the system to make it easier for people to work so they can stay with me longer? That's a really, really good one, rather than breaking themselves along the way. We also need to have compassion for the fact we've been farming since we were two. So we've had a huge amount of work experience with laid down behaviours and patterns and understanding about farming before the next person comes in. Of course, it's easier for us. Of course, we can do things with our eyes closed. So one of the things that is a huge problem in any business is it's very difficult to pay good money or to appreciate somebody else doing a job you can do with your eyes closed. That's a real challenge for farming. They don't value that. They look at it and say, why would I pay somebody that amount of money to milk my cows? I can do that with my eyes closed. But that, in fact, is not what you're paying for. What you're paying for is the opportunity for you to do something else. So it's thinking about people coming into your business, firstly, will never enter your business with that level of commitment. But through a great experience in your business, you can earn that right. And that will look something like people saying, God, my staff love my cows more than I do. They're more committed than I am. They're more interested. They're always talking about the business and coming up with ideas. That's where we're moving towards. That's what everybody would like to see. But if you decide somebody's only working at 70% and you resent them for it, you will behave with them in that manner. You will treat them with a resentment. Yeah, with that bias, absolutely right. And people won't stay with you because why would they? They will feel unvalued. They will feel judged. They will feel that no matter how much they put in, it's not enough. And that, in fact, you only value them when they break themselves in your business. That is not an attractive place to work.
So realistic expectations. And what if then you're noticing their motivation is dropping away? How do you get them back on track to motivate? It's a reflection upon yourself.
What are you offering? It's a great question, Bernie. And one of the things is, firstly, people can't be motivated all the time. What you need to look for is commitment across time. So there's going to be dips. We all have that. It's mood. Motivation is fickle. Like, it's part of your mood. It's transient. So there are weeks when you're flying it and everything is going brilliantly. And then there's other weeks where you're just plodding along and things feel a bit rough. So our years, it's not necessarily time bound. And so trying to constantly chase having, one of the things I would hear a lot is, I want my staff to be happy. Like, that is a pipe dream. You don't know what their sense of happiness is. What you should be doing is creating a system that is fair and equal and allows people to get on with their work. If you do that well, you will generate a level of happiness. You certainly generate a strong level of commitment. But these are kind of big, lofty goals that people think, I need to keep my staff happy. The day you try to keep your staff happy, which is a subjective idea, or the day you try to be nice all the time, which is a subjective idea, you're actually on the back foot. Because you don't know what the other person's value is in relation to nice or happy. So one of the things I would see a lot when we're looking at people management is a misunderstanding of what people want. One of the ones is, I don't want to police, I don't want to hold them accountable. Accountability, structure, clarity is one of the most motivating ways to keep staff in your business. Because when I know what's expected of me, I can apply myself.
Clarity removes argument.
Yeah, clarity removes argument. What a great answer. And you do that clarity all the time with your cows. So when you think about your cows getting to the point of work, you've removed all the blockages from them doing the right thing, i.e. getting to the point of milking, and you create loads of blockages to stop them doing the wrong thing, which is going into the wrong paddocks or straying off the farm roads. So you put lots of clarity in place for people to be able to perform. But in terms of the motivation and people waning in motivation, one of the most common ones I would come across is the kind of statement like, they were so enthusiastic in the beginning, they were absolutely fantastic, and now, I can't get any motivation out of them. They don't even smile. I don't know what to do. And that's really down to planning and understanding and allocating tasks appropriately. So nobody rationally can believe, like, if you step back and think about it, nobody's going to come to your business desperate to fail. Like, I can't wait to work on Bernie Baxter's farm. I'm going to be a failure. Nobody rationally comes into your business to do that. So if people start to fail in your business, it will be some systemic issue, typically. And it looks something like this. Somebody comes to work for you. I go to work for Bernie. I want to make a good first impression, because first impressions are very, very important for humans. I want to make a great first impression. I want Bernie to like me. I've come in to work for him. So I give it gung-ho for the first one. Absolutely apply myself first day of work. But Bernie hasn't let me know what's involved in that day's work. So I give 100% to the first task. Now remember, you can only have 100% on any day, which has to be distributed across the day. You can't apply yourself 100% to every single task. It's physically impossible. 100% has to be carved out across the day. And so I absolutely apply myself to the first task of the day, and I end up, I'm burnt out by lunchtime. I am going to go into a self-protect mode, which is I need to mind myself, I need to mind my energy now. I need to pace myself better, but it's very difficult for me to do that because I don't know what's coming up. The next day when I come to work and the next week when I come to work, I will definitely not have the same level of motivation because I'm in self-protect mode. I like to call it the porridge principle. It is literally, I don't know how much food to eat in the morning to distribute across the day because I don't know what's ahead of me. So when we see people failing in a system and their motivation dropping off quickly, it is often because they don't know what's expected of them on any day that they go to work. People should never go to work to find out what they're going to do. They should know in advance. They should know a minimum of a night between, you know, there should be a night at a minimum between when they're going to do the task and when they're told about the task. Even better, there should be a weekend between when they're going to do the task and when they know about the task. Even better in something like dairy, it would be distributing workload across the year. So while dairy and agriculture is unpredictable on a daily basis, if you clean up your system, it is actually highly predictable across a long-term basis. We know loads about farming on any year that we enter it. We know when we're calving, we know when we're breeding, we know within a week either side of a window when we are harvesting. There's so much information we know about farming that for people to arrive to work not knowing what's expected of them is really quite mind-boggling when you step back and think about it. There is no reason why you can't allocate tasks well in advance. When you allocate tasks well in advance, people come to work primed and ready. They're not waiting and looking around for work. They come to ready, up for it, ready and energized because they know what's ahead of them. They can pace themselves and they can achieve. Achievement is one of the biggest motivators in the workplace. So if you overload the day and expect too much of your staff and you're setting them up to fail because there isn't enough hours in the day for the amount of work you've allocated, they can't achieve. That's very demotivating. So yes, you use the word motivation. One of the lead motivators in the workplace is achievement. Achievement and recognition, in fact, are the two lead motivators in the workplace. So if you plan somebody's workload and they achieve it, they'll feel good about themselves at the end of the day.
And give them space to do it as well.
And give them space to do it. But actually, whatever about space, give them the tools to do it. Like, don't say tomorrow, not like you've got to fence that paddock and you've got 2 hours to do that task, but I haven't any of the stuff ready for you. So of the 2 hours I've allocated for you to do the task, you're going to spend an hour and a half looking for the tools, be really frustrated doing that, try and start the task, not be able to finish it, but I'll still have a go at you for not having the job done. So it's resources available. You need to be fit for purpose. You need to allocate the tasks. It needs to be a realistic workload on any day. If everybody listening to this podcast as a dairy farmer was able to say to themselves at the end of the day, my cows are fed and watered, they're milked and they're safe, that's a good day's work on the dairy farm, we would see dairy businesses being far more tolerant, far less demanding on themselves and the people around them, and far happier in the industry because they wouldn't be setting themselves up to fail regularly by expecting too much of themselves in terms of workload.
What if you did have somebody come up to you who was an employee and say, how do I approach my manager about a pay rise when it actually wasn't necessarily about the pay rise, it was the workload had increased?
Yeah, it's a very common thing for people to approach on money because money is tangible. So really money quite often is the entry into the conversation. So when this person came up to me, a person in UIDN, a manager, a person in a business, just came up and said, look, I've got a different conversation coming up and I want to speak about money to my manager or the business owner. And I said, my question was, do you really want to speak about money or is there something else that's frustrating you? You're just using money as a good entry point. And the person stopped to think about it for a little bit and went, yeah, actually, that's an interesting idea because I think what is frustrating me most is that my workload has been increased, but it hasn't been recognized. And I saw pay as a recognition. And I said, well, maybe instead of asking for pay, maybe you say to the, maybe you give the one of the ways you could do it is to give the, as I said, make an offer they can't refuse. So one of the ways you can look at that is say, look, I'm doing more work, a lot more work than I did when I came in, based on, and more work than the money that you're paying me was allocated for. And if I have to continue doing this amount of work, which I'm struggling with because of the time, because of time, I expect more money. Or I will continue to do the new jobs that you've given me, but you need to take some. So the, it's just the, so this person has had lots of more work, has lots more work put on top because they're a capable individual. But if you put more work on top of somebody, you have to take work from underneath that person. So if you imagine it as a pile, if you put more work on top of the pile, then you need to be able to take work away from the bottom of the pile, or it's just not sustainable. So she said, this particular person said she would actually totally accept that arrangement from her staff, from her her manager, because first of all, that would be a recognition that she was doing a lot of work. And by removing the previous workload or the bottom of the workload that she had, that would be recognition to her that they valued what she was doing now and that that should be managed. So in fact, here's somebody who's going to go and look for money, possibly frustrate the manager or the business because they can't afford the money or don't want to give the money. When in reality, the recognition of her doing more work and doing it well, and therefore needing to offload some of the easier work to other people, that would have motivated her just as much, if not more, than the paycheck.
Oh, that's a great response. And it is important to recognize that when someone does come to you and ask for a pay increase, how do you actually manage that? Because that's some tools there you've given that they could actually say, is it about the money, or has there been this creep of responsibility that has come along, or is it purely competition in the market, which we've experienced here in Australia in the past few years, where people have left their employer because simply they've got an extra X number of dollars somewhere else?
Yeah, it happens. It's realistically in the workplace, relationships break down. You know, people leave the workplace more because of relationship issues within the workplace, or are just unsustainable behavior in the workplace in terms of they've got too much workload. Or it could be somebody else saying, you know, you're spending too long at work there, different things like that. But it isn't that often money, to be honest. And even when somebody jumps ship because they want more money, it's not so much that they want more money, it's what the money represents. So it might be status. It might be, I'm jumping ship and going to a different industry because all my friends are going there. So that's affiliation, so staying with your friends. So we use money often as an entry point for the conversation. But when we can stop and think about it, many people, you know, we get to a point, money is what's known as a hygiene factor in motivation. So we need a certain amount of us to be happy, but more of it doesn't make us happier. So one of the things I'll come across a lot with toxic employers is they say, but I've given them a really good pay packet. Pay doesn't actually substitute for good behavior, for training well, for just basic human respect. It doesn't. You think pay packet abdicates your responsibility to be decent to your staff, you are completely wrong, and people will leave you. So one of the important things to remember is that employment is an emotional state. People stay with you because you made them feel good. It's how you make them feel about themselves. And yes, there'll be times when somebody can jump ship. And that's one of the interesting things about this idea that I need to catch a young person and keep them for life. Because young people have the opportunity to jump ship. They have the opportunity to jump somewhere else and pick money. So we see actually the most consistent employee across all sectors is the person with children and a mortgage, because they don't have that... they don't have that ability to jump as quickly as a younger person would, just for the sake of a couple of pounds or a couple of dollars. So that's an interesting challenge, not to just assume to always look for young people, that there could be somebody local to you that could create an opportunity for you. The other one was, what was the other part of the question, Bernie? So it's, and the other thing is about how you make somebody feel. So feeling valued, feeling involved, feeling created, and also saying, look, this is where you are at the moment. When I increase pay, it's based on an acquisition of extra skills, or it's based on a movement of level within the organization. What else could I offer you that'll make your life easier? And it could be somebody literally saying, I need to get off half an hour earlier because I now need to go and care for my elderly dad, or I now need to go to pick up my kids from nursery because nursery have changed the hours. So sometimes it's saying, I can't afford to give you, the business can't afford to give you the money right now because of the level you're at. These are the things you would need to do to get that actual pay raise. But what can I offer in between? And it's very rarely big. Like one of the things I often do with businesses is say, go and ask your staff, what one thing today would make their lives easier? And you know, employers are terrified at the idea. They're assuming it's got to be a huge pay raise. They're assuming it's going to be like, can I have a sauna or a jacuzzi? Really extravagant. And usually it's really something quite simple that would make my life easier. It'll be something like, one of the ones that always occurs to me is a very cost conscious business that was really stripping out costs all the time. And they were terrified to ask their staff that because they thought it was going to be a huge cost. And they came back and said, actually, they just wanted a radio on the dairy and better strip lighting. Like, it cost the person £30. This was in England. So don't assume that people want huge things. It will always be the simple things that keep somebody in the business, and it'll be the simple things that make somebody exit from your business.
That eat away over time.
Yeah, and so that eat away. Yeah, it just chips away. It just undermines, and then a straw breaks the camel's back. So just don't complicate it. Apply the structure and systems that you know really well as a dairy farmer, because you work with cows and you understand that under stress and pressure that cows don't perform, people are the same. Create that really structured system that you already set up for your cows to make it as easy as possible for your cows to get to the point of work. Don't assume that it has to be, you know, somebody, a caked crusader, who comes in and saves the day for, you know, an external employee coming in making all the difference. Ask internally. Clean up your business. Ask internally first. Support the person who steps up and says, I'm actually quite interested in that role. Demonstrate to them where they are and where they need to be. Put a deadline on it so it doesn't go on forever. And then ask them to support you in your decision to bring in the other person.
Thank you, Nola. Great summary. And you do say that managing people is a skill, and it's a learnable skill. So everyone can consider how they look at how they manage their staff, and reflect on your workshops that you've ran across Australia in the last 5 weeks and previous years, and this podcast here today, to reflect on their own business and what they might be able to do.
Absolutely. And just as a final comment, Bernie, like, don't reinvent the wheel. You have so many skill sets that make you a great dairy business that if you just transferred that skill to people, you would be moving much, much further along the line of being an employer of choice than you could possibly imagine.
Thank you for your time.
For more information and resources to support staff development and management for your farm business, visit the Employing and Managing People section of our website, dairyaustralia.com.au. We have also placed this and other related links in the episode notes. We hope that you have enjoyed this Dairy Pod. If you have any questions or ideas for future episodes, you can get in contact with us by emailing dairypod@dairyaustralia.com.au. Thank you for listening.